Broadcasting Network. The views and opinions presented in this program do not necessarily represent those of WGBB or its employees. You're listening to 1240 WGBB.
The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff,
management, yes,
or owners of WGBB.
He's a little woody for it.
From the heart of the nautical mile, you're listening to the station that serves your community. AM 1240 WGBB.com and 1240 WGBB Freeport.
I am the vine, you are the branches. Remain in me as I remain in you. Live from WGBB, Long Island's oldest radio station. This is the most listened to show. It's time for...
You're a vine? Oh, my God. Brother, a talking vine?
Oh,
we have a talking
God.
Vine? What are we going to do
here?
He
did it again.
Call the police.
Oh, my gosh. He did it again.
Oh, what is this? Oh, this is... Listen up. Jesus is on the air.
And that was Dr. John Palmer. I'm Dr.
I'm another
Anthony
vine.
Schiffo. And we're here to tell... we got a great guest, but we're here to tell you we love Jesus. And we got a great guest today. Before we introduce the guest, let me just say something. I want to welcome some new visitors, new listeners.
Sure.
Michael, Joseph, and Bill are listening to our show for the first time. Thank you so much. This makes, I think, 25 listeners we have
28.
Now. 28 listeners we have now. Right. And we welcome you. And they were a big part of my son Michael's operation. They were mentors to him, and actually they were guardian angels. I believe Jesus sent them to him to get him to his operation. So thank you, guys, and thank you for listening. So let's get on with the show.
You know, brother, we have 28 listeners, but every now and then we lose one because Trevor falls off his chair. He's our engineer, and he goes right down like a shot.
He does a great job. We love you, Trevor. Thank you so much. So welcome, brother.
Thank you, James. It's a delight to be here.
And we know this is not, you're not new to the show. You've been on the show before, and I think you're a fan of the show, and we thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm always delighted to be with you.
Tell us a little something about your...
Well, why don't we give your full name first?
Oh, yeah, right.
Brother
Thanks.
James. Thanks. Last name?
Brother James McVeigh.
McVeigh,
yeah. A Franciscan brother of Brooklyn.
Right, and... Co-vicar
currently co-vicar for religious in the Diocese of Rockville Center, and also the Franciscan Mission Coordinator at St. Francis Prep.
So you hold a lot of hats.
Yes, and I love all of them. I'm blessed. I get to work with wonderful people like you guys.
Thank you. I worked with you for a few years
when you were heading up the Office of New Evangelization.
Oh, but you worked with him for a few years?
I did.
Oh, yeah.
And he made it. And he made it.
And you made it.
He didn't die or anything like that.
They didn't
carry him away.
We were truly blessed to have John.
But, brother, you know, you're into something that's very important for our listeners to hear about, the year of consecration. Maybe living consecration. Maybe you can explain what that is.
You know, very often in the church, we take for granted so many parts of the church. Mm-hmm. And our Holy Father decided last year that he was going to have a year for consecrated life. And within consecrated life falls the major forms that we're familiar with, religious sisters, religious brothers, and religious priests. But it also has other forms, such as consecrated virgins. So the Holy Father decided it would be a good time. We had had a year of faith, we had had the year of the priest, and now we'll have the year of mercy coming up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That he was going to have this year for consecrated life, to promote consecrated life, to recognize the great work that the sisters, the brothers, and the priests do in our many dioceses and our many ministries.
Mm-hmm.
They are, in the United States alone, there are over 66,000 religious sisters, brothers, and priests that serve in so many different ministries. And the Holy Father basically said to us when he announced it, he said, religious life ought to promote growth in the church by way of attraction. The church must be attractive. Wake up the world. Be witnesses of a different way of doing things, of acting, of living. It is this witness that I expect of you. Religious should be men and women who are able to wake up the world. And we do that in so many of our ministries. Most people are familiar with Sisters and Brothers, particularly from schools and hospitals and things like that. But since the Second Vatican Council, we've had religious sisters, brothers, and priests who have been active in so many of the newer ministries that have emerged. And certainly identifying with so many of the things that the Holy Father has close to his heart, working with the poor, reaching out to all those who are on the periphery. As a Franciscan, St. Francis always encouraged us to mirror Christ by welcoming everybody as sister and brother, and especially the lepers of society. You know, in Francis's time, there was actually many lepers living there. But in our own society, there are many people we push to the side, many people whom we don't welcome up. Welcome into the church, many people that we don't accept for their differences, whatever they may be. And we see this in so many of the conflicts in our cities and in our states. And both Pope Francis and St. Francis is saying to us, and every religious, whether they be Benedictines or Dominicans or Josephites, whatever group they are, reach out, whether it be soup kitchens, whether it be a ministry to people with AIDS, whether it be shelters, whether it be places for the homeless, all these different types of ministries that are out there. And we continue to need sisters and brothers in our ministries. I often, when I was a vocation director, I used to say to the young students, do you want to have sisters and brothers around for your children, for your grandchildren? And they would all say yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I'd say to them, well, where do you think they come from? I'm not on a shelf in Walmart's. You can't put me in a copy machine. So if you want them, you must be part of the solution. You must be out there inviting your friends, people in your family, to think about it.
Now, Father, I have a question.
Yes.
And the question is very simple. How did you first, and when did you first decide you were going to lead a consecrated life?
It comes at different times for different people, and we all need to be open to the Spirit. For me, it was when I was very young. For others, the little thought may be there like a seed and comes and develops. And oftentimes, it's like we're running away from it and we don't want to accept God's call. I first was very impressed as a young boy about St. Francis and what he did. So that led me to think about it. I entered the Franciscans after high school. Today, many people enter after college or even a little older as they, because the whole society has changed. People make commitments much later in life than we did when we were younger. So it's important that we always be open to the call of the Spirit, that we always be open and listening to the fact that, what does God really want me to do?
And I see so many people from the prayer groups all over Long Island, lay people, who are living consecrated lives without being formally consecrated.
Well, okay, that's a good point, because that was my next question.
Because they just want to be close to God. Yeah. We have the Onions Day prayer groups. You remember them?
Yes, sure.
And they journal, and they are so close to God. They're so holy, I'm afraid to touch them.
Well, I'm one of those journalists, you know.
That's why. You're a vine. You told us you're a vine.
You're a vine. Well, we have to remember that we're all consecrated by virtue of our baptism.
Okay.
So for each and every person, that's where our spirit with God, with the Holy Spirit, begins. And then as we, and certainly after the Second Vatican Council, the church opened up the doors in so many ways to our wonderful laity. And even all the saints. St. Francis, when he founded his Franciscan order, he invited the lay people to be part of it, not to leave their families, not to leave their jobs, but to take the ideals that he was trying to get across to everybody else and to make that work. But as the Holy Father says, we still need religious sisters, brothers, and priests, who stand as full-time professionals, in a sense, as people who witness. And it's not so much the work that we do. Anybody can do the work. But we need to be witnesses of joy. We need to be prophetic, in particular. And the Holy Father uses that word constantly. We need to be humble, and we need to be compassionate and merciful. And we need to be there as very public witnesses of the church reaching out to other people. In a sense, even when we talk about our three vows, religious take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Our vows are not shackles. They're not a hindrance. They free us to be able to give ourselves completely to other people. All right. So my vow of poverty isn't advocating I live in a box on Hillside Avenue or something like that. It's advocating that I witness to other people that material goods are not important to me. They're not the primary thing in my life. I don't have to have the fanciest, the newest of everything. That my vow of poverty frees me about having to worry about all sorts of costs and expenses so that I can use my energy and my goods for the use of others. Chastity is a beautiful gift we get from God. It's a gift of a loving life that is not given to one person, is not given to one family, but rather by my love, by my vow of chastity, I love everyone. All those I minister to, all those families that I stand with when they're in trouble, whether it's with somebody who's ill in the family, or when they have other concerns, or when they just need somebody to have a spiritual conversation.
And even the vow of chastity works with married couples.
Yes.
Because you have to realize that you have agape love that you're sharing.
Mm-hmm.
You're sharing God's love with your spouse and with your family. And you want to be as free from sinfulness as possible.
And that's the thing about the vows. And that's something else. People get hung up on the vow of chastity as that's something that religious do. They give all that up. But vows are for us to be faithful to, no matter what vow we take.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the vow of marriage, which then makes us celibate and chaste in dealing with anybody else other than our partner for life in God. And whether it's the religious who gives their life to the church. And in a sense, you know, with the sisters, oftentimes they speak about the church, you know, as the spouse, as being the spouse. So it's very important that whether it be the married, the single, we can't leave the single out. There are many people who live wonderful, prayer-filled, holy lives as a single person and still do good.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as couples grow older, and you know, I've lost two wives.
Yes, God.
But even the period of time when they're ill, and you're not being sexually active, but you're showing love by caring for the person with whom you marry.
I say that to the students all the time. When you think about love, you think about the soap operas. You think about these beautiful, good-looking people and everything. I said, if you want to see love, look at your grandparents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
look at your grandparents who have been together for 40, 50, 60 years. They're no longer physically attractive. They don't have all those tappings. But you see a genuine love.
Yes.
They express that. You just see it in their eyes when they're talking to each other. And each of us, we need to be in love with God. We need to be able to be so much in love with God that whether we're a religious brother or sister or a married person or a single person, we bring that to the church.
And you mentioned poverty, chastity, and what is the third?
The third vow is obedience.
Yeah.
And obedience in the old days meant you got the letter and you were just sent. But it means a lot more. Again, it frees you that I can move quickly if I need to. I don't have to move my family and everything else. So obedience means that I am obedient to the needs of my religious community and obedient to the needs of the church. So that if the church says they need people here, then I can be obedient to helping in that way.
So that means that the lady could concentrate to lead a life of devotion to the Blessed Mother and to our Heavenly Father and to our Lord without having to join a religious order. How can that happen?
Well, you know, I think the other thing that's important is that each and every person needs to see their baptism as leading them to the Lord, to our Blessed Mother, to their favorite saints, to the work of the church.
Mm.
But when we talk about the year of consecrated life, we need to involve the laity in
that. They couldn't lead a consecrated life, though, can't they?
they don't take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. They can join, be an associate to a religious community. They can join the many third orders like the Franciscans, Dominicans, and Benedictines. That's what I spoke about before with St. Francis, that there are ways that you can keep the charism. But we, during this year, as we celebrate the year of consecrated life, my message to the laity would be that what are you going to do to continue that? Are you going to invite your children, your grandchildren, to consider the life of being a religious sister or a religious brother or to join a religious order of priest? Are you going to be part of moving that forward? We know that in these days, oftentimes, it's the grandparents who have kept the faith alive in families. So I always say, you know, I went to North Carolina when I was a vocation director, and the people were saying to me, when are you going to send us more brothers? And I said, when you send us more sons.
I mean, it's as simple as that.
We don't grow on trees. So, but people need to recognize that. They need to say, if you see somebody, if you belong to a prayer group, and you see somebody you think would make a wonderful sister or a brother, just say, you know, Mary, did you ever think about becoming a sister? Johnny, I think you'd make a great brother. Right? We don't do enough of that. And the Holy Father is saying that to us too. That invitation, all the CARA research from the Center for Research says that many people were never invited to become a sister or a brother or a religious order priest.
So what's your advice to
out an invitation
an
today.
Yes. What's your advice to someone that's like got it in the back of their minds, hasn't really acted on it, but thinks about it? What advice can you give them?
Well, what you need to do, it's like everything else, all right? You have to become familiar with it. So if the thought is there, go talk to somebody. You know, they on the internet now, all you have to do is Google any order and you'll find everything.
Yeah. Sure.
But find somebody. Go to a sister that works in the parish, or if you're working with one of the brothers in the soup kitchen, say something to them. Get to know them. To the grandparents and parents, I say, you know, get to know the religious in your parish. Invite them over to the house. Make them part of your family. That's how people begin to, you know, people aren't going to join something they don't feel comfortable with,
connected to
that they don't know anything about. So service is usually a great opportunity for religious themselves to promote their vocations by inviting other people to serve with them, to go and do things. I take groups of students over to a nursing home. We spend the day helping to feed the residents and take them to their different activities and things like that. It's an opportunity for them to see me in a role other than just teaching, you know, or in a role other than just being a vicar for religious. So our lay people need to become so comfortable with religious that it's not only the Whoopi Goldberg image that's out there, you know, that there are many, many Mother Teresa's that are around and people who have given their lives to educating the youth, okay, and young people coming in. We just welcomed a young man into our community. He received the Franciscan habit in February. He's our hope. That, you know, that he will continue to do the wonderful things that we do and have done for over 150 years.
You know, as you're talking, brother, too, I think of Paul Miller, who is a close friend of ours, and he's a Third Order Franciscan, and he's also consecrated. He's married, and he runs a soup kitchen in New Jersey where he serves 125,000 meals a year.
Isn't that fantastic?
And he has a whole volunteer staff of lay people who are committed to doing that work. I mean, there's a living example, I think, of what you're talking, although he's not a professed Franciscan. He's married with children.
Right. But he's a laity. It's concentrated.
And we have a lot of prayer group members in different prayer groups who consecrate themselves to the Immaculate Heart of Mary and the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And I don't know, I've done that, and it means that you say the rosary and go to Eucharist as often as possible. And
I'm in the process
like
of doing it now.
Yeah, and it's really such a wonderful way to get in touch, at least if not as member of a religious order, but get in touch with the wonder of God's love. And isn't that what you do? I mean, I'm sure you're... place where you live is not holy all the time.
You have part of religious life is the fraternity. It's the community life. And, you know, I'll say to the kids, you know, my brothers, they're the people who tease me. They're the ones who mock me. They're the ones who tell me to get off my high horse. They're the ones who tell me.
John that all the time.
Sounds like family.
Exactly. They were there when my mother died. You know, so that's the beauty of what oftentimes attracts people to religious life is the prayer life. That we, you know, in a sense, you are professional prayers. You have the time. It's built into your schedule each day when you come together to pray. It's that community life, whether it's meals or whether it's just going to a ball game or to a movie or celebrating a holiday together. All those types of things that bring joy. You know, I lived in a house where one of the brothers would just take out the keyboard and start leading us in song on St. Patrick's Day or something. Mm-hmm. And that type of camaraderie, it gives you, I say community life is like the fuel, okay? Community life and prayer are the fuel that give you the energy to go outside yourself to reach out to other people. And that's what sisters and brothers do all the time, that our life is dedicated to the people of God so we can be there to walk with them as brother or sister and to be able to reach out to them. And we're blessed with so many of our religious order and our diocesan priests and seminarians and all of those who point us to Jesus as well.
And they don't have halos over their heads.
Oh, no. Well,
they're not always, real people.
Right. They're human not beings easy, just like us, right. Yeah.
Well, St. Francis, even in his own lifetime, if you know in the life of St. Francis, he did everything to the extreme, absolutely, including poverty and everything. Mm-hmm. And even in his lifetime, he saw some of that disintegrate because the church was saying, you know, Francis, this is just too radical. It's too radical for people. You know, you can do that, and some people can do that, but you can't expect everybody to do that. And within the church, our charisms, all the different religious orders, there are those that live it in different ways. Obviously, if you're a college professor or if you're a doctor in a hospital, there are certain tools and things that you would need. You
know, and demands.
I could not imagine St. Francis even thinking about an iPad or a computer or something like that. But to do your job, you need to have that. That's not against poverty. But then we have other religious who live extreme poverty in neighborhoods where the people need them as witnesses, and they're all equal gifts. It's not that one is better than the other. Mm-hmm. It's that each of us, God calls each religious sister, each religious brother, all of our religious priests, to go where I need you to be.
Absolutely.
And even though these new things come and new needs are there. Certainly, we worked with the immigrants. Most of our communities came from Europe to work with the immigrants. Back in 1858, we came to work with the Irish immigrants. We continue to welcome immigrants into our schools. All right, we still do that as being Franciscan. But all these other ministries that have emerged, whether they be soup kitchens, et cetera, but we're always going to need to educate people.
Yeah.
We're always going to need to educate beyond just regents and core curriculum and things like that to bring people to what has God called you to be? How do you live out your faith? How do you bring that message to other people? These are essentials for the future. And if people respond and right up there, you know, Pope Francis is saying, wake up the world, get out there, stir the embers, get down and dirty, and be there with the people, and witness to them your joy. You know, St. Francis was always known for his joy. He used to run around,
absolutely,
leading everybody in singing and dancing. And so that these are all ways that religious, no matter what their charism may be, the Sisters of St. Joseph are known for hospitality. Lots of other different groups of sisters and brothers have their own specific ways of doing things.
And is that how the Franciscans embraced the new evangelization?
For sure. You know, that's what. Remember, back in the time of St. Francis, the society then was very much like it is now. War, poverty, scandals of every kind and imaginable within and outside the church. And he came and he said, the gospel is my life. I'm not a college teacher. I'm not a soup kitchen person. The gospel is my life. And if I live the gospel, if I mirror Christ, then whatever I'm doing, I'll do it well.
How is the diocese going to celebrate the year of consecrated life?
We have been celebrating it all along. Each month we have retreat days that we're doing, collaborating with the Brooklyn Diocese and with St. John's University and the Vincentians, where we have religious come to celebrate the year of consecrated life by renewing their spirit. So we're doing that. We have our normal events that we've done, our ongoing formation. We had Brother Sean Salmon, a Marist brother, come and speak to all the sisters and brothers. We had Sister Mary Hughes, a Dominican, who's very involved in working with the religious through LCWR, speak to us. We had, just recently, we had Vespers at St. Anthony's. We celebrate each year bringing the religious together as religious to celebrate the Vespers, and then we also honor some of them, because oftentimes we don't honor our religious. So we take representing the great works that they do in different areas. We have planned May 30th, we're going to have a morning of prayer at St. Anthony's for the religious to come together, and St. Anthony's Gregorian Scholar is going to lead us in sacred music, and we're going to intersperse that with readings from Perfecte Caritatis, from Vita Consecrata, from all the documents that have come out of Rome. We have our bishop celebrates with the religious every year with their jubilees, and we're having him to do a special day next November with our religious to celebrate their lives. We've invited the religious orders to open their houses, as the USCCB has encouraged us, to open your convents and houses so people can come in and get to see what your home is like, what your family life is like.
How can I, as a layperson, celebrate that year of consecrated life?
Well, you're doing it right now. Look at the great thing you're doing right now by just getting the word out there. Because that's probably the most difficult thing for us sometimes, is just to get the word out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's so very important. And to get our young people. I go around also to our colleges. I've been to our college campuses to speak to our Newman clubs to get the word out there. So I'm going around. You know, I was with Darcel and on her radio show,
her television show. Our show.
Yes. So to reach out to our various multicultural groups.
So if there are people like John and I, Elder, that haven't really consecrated our lives as such, how can we, or how can our listeners, define themselves and consecrate their lives to Jesus without being part of the just being part of the laity?
Well, that should be their everyday activity. That comes with their baptismal call. So that our first consecration is through our baptism. So each and every one of us is called to a prayerfulness. And so much of your work with the prayer groups is just so incredibly successful. That was one of the things I used to love when I worked with you, was to go around and see all these wonderful people in these different prayer groups representing such diverse backgrounds and different interests. Mm-hmm. So certainly by attending prayers, the different types of prayer groups, through creating, you know, Bishop Sheen used to do a holy hour every day. And it just take an hour of the day. You may have the benefit of being able to do it before the Blessed Sacrament, but even if you can't, light a candle, sit near a statue, or look out the window at God's beauty, and just recognize the presence of God in your life. And that's how you build holiness. With the students, I'd say to them very often, pick an object, a light switch, a color. Every time you see that object or that color, just say, "For you, Jesus." Takes a couple of seconds. And if you do that every time you see a light switch or the color red or whatever object, you're sanctifying your whole day. You don't have to be on your knees for hours, but you're reminding yourself you're sanctifying the whole day.
I'm smiling because I remember one time I went on a little campaign. And I came out after church, and I made a point I was going to thank the priests for their vocation. And there was a priest there, a young guy. And I said, "Father, I want to thank you." He said, "For what?" I said, "For your vocation." And he kind of shuffled around, and he said, "Well, I guess you're welcome." You know, you know, he was so humble.
Sure.
But I think we should all take a moment, and just if we know a nun or a brother or a priest, say thank you. Mm-hmm. I would not be here as a Catholic were it not for the Sisters of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all that way.
By the way, brother, remember that image of him smiling. You don't see it too often. I actually wanted to take a picture of it.
No, John smiles often. Yeah. I've seen him smile.
Oh, yeah,
often.
Huh? Look at you.
Did you have anything else you wanted to add, brother?
I'd like to just encourage people. Vocations come from the ranks of men and women who are active in their parishes. As we guide the youth and young people in our lives, our nephews, our nieces, our grandchildren, in their personal, social, and spiritual growth, the Church relies on us to assist young people in developing the skills to discern where God might be calling them. And I think that goes back to the inviting we spoke about before. Mm-hmm. How do we get young people to feel comfortable within the Church? And there are so many opportunities within our parishes and our schools to do that. And if each and every one of us gives that gift to Jesus of continuing the great work of our Church by encouraging people to consider, not everybody is going to be a priest, a brother, or a sister, but to consider it, that this may be something important to them.
You know, brother, as I was thinking of today, I started hearing a song in my head. And I think it really fits because it talks about Jesus, what a wonder you truly are.
And great song.
This is what all the religious feel. It's the Maranatha singers. Now you're waiting for the words, aren't you? You're waiting.
Yes, I
can tell.
I am.
You're looking. How this God's going to work out? This is the way he does. And his head goes, is this going to really work out, or is he just funning us?
He's always got me at the edge of my seat.
And you know, what went through my mind is that you're not joining a religious order. You're following Jesus more closely and deeply, letting his love take over, and you discover him. He's a wonder.
That's it.
The vine,
yeah.
He is the vine, and we are the branches.
That's right. And that's what people who have vocations find.
Yes.
They find God's love and how gentle and how caring he truly is. And he supports them when they make their choices to follow him.
Would you mind if I read the prayer of Pope Francis?
Not at all.
I can leave the music on.
I'll lower the music.
Yeah. Good. That would be great.
Lord of the harvest, bless young people with the gift of courage to respond to your call. Open their hearts to great ideals, to great things. Inspire all of your disciples to mutual love and giving. For vocations blossom in the good soil of faithful people. Instill those in religious life, parish ministries, and families with the confidence and grace to invite others to embrace the bold and noble path of a life consecrated to you. Unite us to Jesus through prayer and sacrament so that we may cooperate with you in building your reign of mercy, and truth, of justice and peace. These are the prayers, the words of Pope Francis that each of us can bring to heart.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And it, brother, I think we've done a half-hour commercial on why people should step forward and explore even the hint of a vocation in their hearts. Because like you said, who's going to do it?
So very important.
And absolutely. Listen as we ask you to take the words of the prayer that brother just read to heart so that you will encourage your children, even if they say, you know, I think I may. Encourage them to take a step in that direction. Why not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll pray.
We have saints every week, brother.
Yes.
And these are people who also took steps. Who did you choose?
Yeah, this is in prayer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I thought about St. Anthony, but and I was somehow or other led to St. Anthony of Egypt.
Mm.
And now I know why I was led to St. Anthony of Egypt, brother, because you actually clarified it at the beginning of the show when you mentioned the vow of poverty. And so he depicts the vow of poverty. And so, you know, this is truly led by the Holy Spirit. I'm guaranteed.
Good.
So who is Saint Anthony of Egypt? The patriarch of monks.
Hmm.
That's what he was. And concerning Anthony of Egypt, we do have a lot of knowledge of him as a saint before he became a saint, because a lot was written by a friend of his, Saint Anastasius.
Athanasius.
Yeah. And so they were good friends, and he wrote a lot about him. So there's a lot of information. So Anthony was born in 251 in a village in the middle of Egypt. His Christian parents wished to protect him from the bad examples and kept him closely at home, so that he grew up in ignorance of pagan literature and read no language but his own. At his parents' death, before he had reached the age of 20, he found himself in possession of a large estate responsible for the care of his younger sister. So as I said, he was about 20, but also at that age, he had heard a reading from Matthew 19:21. And it's a story of how Jesus had once met a rich young man who wanted to know how he might get to heaven when he died. Jesus told him to sell everything he had and give the money to the poor. That way, you will have treasures in heaven, Jesus told him. Anthony couldn't get the story out of his mind. He himself was a very rich young man. He lived in a city named Memphis in Egypt. His parents had died and left him a tremendous amount of money and a much younger sister to take care of. After thinking the matter over, he decided what he must do. He paid in advance for everything his sister would need while she was growing up. He also provided a dowry for her, the sum of money that a wife was expected to give her husband when they were married at that time. Then Anthony sold his house and all his possessions and gave all the remaining money away to the poor and went to live in the Egyptian desert.
Hmm.
There he found an underground cave and lived in it for 20 years. During those years, he spent his time fasting and praying. Friends helped him to survive by bringing him occasionally loaves of bread. When he was in the desert, he sometimes heard voices in his head and had strange visions of dreams. He believed that the devil was tempting him to give up this way of life. Actually, because the devil knew Jesus was so pleased with his actions. Why should he do without food and wine and music and all the good things everybody else has in life? Sometimes the devil appeared to him in the form of a very attractive young woman and started tempting him to enjoy the company of a woman. At the end of the 20 years during which time he had resisted all these temptations, he decided to go to northern Egypt city of Alexandria. The Romans were prosecuting any Christians then they found there. And Anthony did all he could to help those who were sent for trial and execution. After a while, the Romans stopped attacking the Christians, and Anthony decided to return to the desert where his true love was. But life there was not the same as it had been. During his time in Alexandria, Anthony had become famous, and now people came out to the desert to see him. Anthony never turned away anyone, but gave them any advice and help he could. Many stayed there and followed Anthony's way of life, so becoming the first ever community of monks. It was during this time that Anthony visited Paul, the hermit, and found Paul's cloak. When Anthony was very old, he called two friends to him. "It won't be long before I die. After all, I'm 105 years old. You know, promise me one thing." "Of course," said the friends. "What is it?" "Promise to bury me secretly, so no one will know the place except you." And that's what they did. To this day, nobody knows where his body was hidden. So people can't really go to honor and pay tribute to him. And so that's the short life of a very, very humble, devoted man that could have had the world in his hand and gave it all up to poverty for Jesus. And so this is exactly what you spoke about at the beginning of the program.
It's only 105 years of age, too. That's not so bad, right?
No, no. We're almost there.
But
not far.
You're doing great things.
But you know, brother, that sample of our saint of the day is an extreme lifestyle, but that's not what you're saying the religious life is like.
No.
It's not extreme. And you find a way to fit in and to follow along with whatever God has in mind.
Yes.
We need to be with God's people.
Yes.
You know, that was the difference between the monks and the friars. St. Francis said to his brothers, "The world is your cloister. You shouldn't be behind the wall. You need to be out in the midst of the people."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about being a brother. And we are the forgotten vocation of the church. Many people don't even know we exist.
Yes.
And I always say to people, just in case we get a little stupid, even within the word brothers is the word others, as a reminder to why we exist, mm-hmm. to bring others closer to Jesus.
Mm. Right. I'm one of those. Can you differentiate the difference between, I know the consecration and all that, but can you define the difference between a brother and a priest?
Religious brothers and priests who join a religious order as opposed to diocesan priests.
Mm-hmm.
A priest, the primary role of the priest is to be our sacramental leader.
Mm-hmm.
The priest is the one who celebrates Eucharist. He's the one who administers the sacrament of reconciliation. So those are things that none of us can, nobody else in the church can do. So that's their primary role. If they decide that they want to be a teacher or something else, that's something else they can do, but they don't become a priest to do that. They become a priest to administer the sacraments.
Exactly.
Religious sisters and brothers, our primary role is to witness the gospel through our religious life. All right, we may be teachers or work at a soup kitchen or something like that, but by our life of prayer for God's people, by our living together in community as a prophetic witness to the fact that somebody needs to take Francis's words, constantly asking for mercy and forgiveness, and to witness to that, to go out to the extremes, to the periphery, as St. Francis would say, to go out to the lepers, to bring everybody in. And our role is to mirror Christ. Even St. Francis, it was never about him. It's not about the religious. It's about our role to mirror Christ in everything that we do.
That's a beautiful explanation.
So that's the major. It's our community life. We live together. Very often our diocesan priests are living alone in a rectory, or and they're all alone. We have decided that we want to vow and connect our holiness as a community
to the people
with a particular charism, as a Franciscan or a Marianist brothers or the Benedictine sisters that work with the elderly, or the Sisters of Mercy, or any of the different religious communities within our diocese.
Wow.
And you know, it's so funny that you asked that question, Tony, because we have a contributor who writes a meditation on Sunday's scripture. And I'm going to read it now because it's such a nice
Can I call him an admirer of our program?
Yeah. and it's all around love. Children, let us love not in word or speech, but in deed and truth, which is what you're talking about, brother. How often it is good to be reminded that love is more a matter of doing good than feeling good. How often people betray one another and even God with words that speak of love, but are often empty of loving. How may we correct this way of behaving? And this is what you've spoken about all through the show. The answer is always to look at Jesus crucified. That's what love is all about. As Mother Teresa would often say, it hurt Jesus to love us, but he did not stop loving us. He loved, even when it hurt to love. This is the manner of loving all need to learn and to put in practice. Next time there is some problem or tension in the family, who is the one who will decide to be loving by humbling oneself before the other? In the family, who will demonstrate the love of Jesus when it comes to reconciliation and forgiveness? Who will take upon oneself the extra burdens of the day for the other who may be suffering in some way? To love in deed and truth means we all have to be more like Jesus. And he asked listeners, are you ready to do so? Will you decide to do so? Or will you wait till you feel like it? By then, it will be too late. Isn't that neat?
That's beautiful.
Isn't that neat? And it's really just what you've been talking about, brother. When a person consecrates themselves to a religious life, they do it for love of Jesus. It's just such a beautiful way, and like you said, people ask, why, if you're a brother, why wouldn't you be a priest? Well, it's a different vocation,
right? Exactly.
And it's one of service and not sacramental sharing. Not that you don't use the sacraments.
Exactly. Sacraments are vital to us.
But you know, it's just so important that love be emphasized. We have it in our family, we have it in prayer groups, and you have it in your office, the people who live in consecrated lives. And that's such a burden that for you, in terms of having to help them remain constant to what they wish to do. And it's hard for you too as well, I'm sure. And you have a sister who helps you too, don't you?
Sister Pat Moran, a sister of the Congregation of Infant Jesus, is our co-vicar. Mm-hmm. And she's a tremendous help to us also in that office of being present and being the bishop's delegate to all of the religious within the diocese, so that we keep them in constant touch with the bishop, and we are the bishop's voice, in a sense, to them. And in all
and it's
these
a voice
things,
of love. It's not a voice of correction or punishment. It's a voice of love. Because our bishop is a special man in his way. And people don't see that sometimes, or don't know that, because he's king of the mountain, you know?
in many ways, our bishop takes the words of St. Francis when he said to the said to his brothers and sisters, "Preach the gospel often. Mm-hmm. When necessary, use words."
Yes, mm-hmm.
Bishop Murphy is an eloquent preacher of homilies, but his life speaks of that also. And mm-hmm. I think that's, and for each and every one of our listeners, I think that's often. It's we had that beautiful reading on love,
mm-hmm.
and we need to do it, not talk about it.
Absolutely.
We need to do it.
That's what makes Bishop Murphy so special, by the way, his portrayal of the love for Jesus.
Yes. So, and the other word that we've used a number of times this morning is that word of inviting. How many times did Jesus say in the Gospels, "Come, follow me"?
Absolutely.
You know, that's how his early disciples came
everyone,
to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do, is invite people, everybody, to follow Jesus in their own way, and in particular to invite people in a special way to consider becoming a religious sister or a religious brother or a religious priest. It's all part of the great circle of love that Jesus stands in the middle of, that image of the divine mercy, of mm-hmm. those beautiful rays flowing from the heart of Jesus, and that we are there in that circle to catch that love. And to preach it not by words, but to preach it by our own actions. And to be a person during this year of consecrated life who's going to take an active role in building up God's church by inviting people to consider the religious life, to join consecrated life.
And brother, on every radio program, we offer prayers for our listeners or for some special need that would grow out of what we've talked about today. So maybe we could stop for a few moments and in prayer ask Jesus to help people say yes, to help people step forward. It's never easy, never easy. But even just stepping forward as a volunteer in some of the services done by the religious orders is a step towards exploring your vocation. So, Jesus, we put ourselves in your presence, and we ask you, Lord, to continue to bless Brother James in his work and his companion, Sister Pat, so that the religious of our diocese feel your love, feel your support, feel your energy, and are filled with your grace, Lord Jesus. It's not easy in the lives that they've chosen. But Lord, fill them with your joy as they go about doing your work and sharing your love personally, intimately, delicately, and gently every day, every day. And brother, we also have people that send in petitions and who need help. And while we can't go out to each person, we certainly can offer prayer. Would you be willing to lead us in a prayer for people who are seeking help for a variety of reasons, physical, mental, emotional? Would you take some time?
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
Loving Jesus, you fill our hearts with love. You have guided us through our lives in so many different ways. And yet, Lord, there are still many who struggle. There are many who are in pain in so many different ways. It may not just be physical, Lord. It may be people suffering through family problems, people suffering through the needs of losing their job or losing their home. Lord, we ask you to reach out to each of those, to bring them peace in their lives, to let them know the wonderful graces and love that you give to them each day, to pick them up, give them strength, send into their lives other people who will be bridge builders between you and them to assist them in their great needs. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for all that you do for us, and please help all of those who have requested our prayers.
Anthony?
Dear Jesus, we give you praise and glory and thanks. And we thank you for sending us Brother James today. And we thank you for...
It was special.
He was absolutely special. It was an honor. It always is. And thank you, Jesus, for answering our petitions. And in our petitions, we have even our own family, our sons, John and I, and our daughters, and our son, my son, who just got operated, and you graciously sent them what I call the three guardian angels that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. So, Jesus, thank you. We give you praise and glory and thanks, and we ask that you stay by our sides and our petition sides. You help them, you guide them, you hold their hand, and you let them know that you are not only their best friend, but truthfully, you are their big brother.
And I would like to add Trevor to our prayer list.
Absolutely.
And Lord, bless Trevor in his ministry, and in give him the health he needs, Lord, to continue doing the wonderful work he does at his church in Queens Village.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that he was just made, got a promotion.
Yeah, he got a big promotion.
We're so happy. Give him the strength, Lord, that he can pursue doing your work in his new role.
He's an elder.
He's an elder, yes.
Oh, how wonderful.
How wonderful.
That's wonderful.
And so thank you, Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you for 4 wonderful years so far of being so faithful and being at almost every one of our shows. Thank you, Trevor.
And he's so humble. He doesn't. Yeah. He just hides in the corner. He won't say anything.
Well, he's learning from us.
He's learning how humble we are. And you know, the station here on Saturday focuses on religious life in different religions. Before this show, there's a Greek show. After the show, there's Spanish shows.
Yeah.
And Trevor has his own gospel show.
It's a great show. I listen to it. Sunday night.
Yeah.
Sunday night.
Preacher man. You know? Yeah. And it's really just so special.
Yeah.
I'd like to go out with a song. I don't know how much time we have left, Trevor.
About four minutes.
Song is just about right. And because it's the Maranatha Singers, and they're singing, "I Will Serve You, Lord."
Oh, beautiful.
And I think it just fits the whole tenor of the program.
Just let me thank listeners for listening. We love you, listeners. Thank you so much. Without you, we would have no show. And thank you. And thank you for the 3 new listeners also. Up to 20.
And we also thank Paul Miller for his support of our show.
Yes.
And his wonderful work in his ministry in the Divine Mercy Center in Newark.
He's a dear friend.
And listeners, this is the words that are just for you. You have to say yes.
Life to me.
And that you'll serve Jesus.
I was nothing until you found me. You have given life to me.
Heartaches,
broken people, ruined lives are why you died on Calvary. Your touch
is what I long
for. You have
given life to me.
I will serve you
because I love you.
Given life to me.
I was nothing
until you found me. You have given life to me.
Heartaches,
broken people,
ruined
lives are why you died on Calvary. Your touch is what I long for. You have given life to me.
Brother, we want to thank you again. What a wonderful time. What a delightful
program. It's
really so nice. So gentle.
You do such wonderful things for our church.
Thank you. We love you, brother.
We love you, too.
God bless you.
The views expressed
in the name of all the religious for having us here represent those
of our staff,
management, or owners of WGBB.
But you got to promise you're going to come back.
Of course.
Thank you.
Died on Calvary, your
given life to me.
And we'll let this play until the time runs out on the show.
And again, thank you, listeners. We love you so.
And thank the religious people.
Yes.
People who have consecrated their lives to
Jesus.
I will serve
you.
They're doing this.
They're
listeners. We want more.
You
encourage your kids to say yes.
Life to me. I was not.
From the heart of the nautical mile, you're listening to the station that serves your community. AM 1240 WGBB.com and 1240.